listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen, and I'm going to talk right now with Tom Rogan, columnist for National Review and Opportunity Lives, and a senior fellow at the Steamboat Institute. Now, Tom, all over the news right now is U.S. and Russia and what's going to go on. Is Trump Putin's tool? Is Vlad the Impaler running things here and all around the world? And I wanted to dig into this a little bit because I'm always fascinated. I mean, I'm a Cold War era, you know, guy myself. I worked for Reagan back in the day as a soldier. Now we've got the entire concept that perhaps the resurgent, you know, Russian bear in the form of Vlad Putin is really playing the U.S. And I'm curious if you think that somehow the tables have turned that much and the Russian Empire is really pushing us around.
I think it is, but I think it's pushing us around in a different way than perhaps, you know, Americans would conceive of being pushed around. Today, we're being pushed around in the manipulation of perceptions of American power and realities of American power. And what I mean by that is, if you look at what's happened in Syria, where the Russians have saved Assad's regime, they haven't simply saved Assad's regime. And I know a lot of Americans would say, you know what, maybe Assad is the better deal. I disagree with that, but regardless, that's one point. What they have done in saving Assad is to degrade America's credibility with allies and foes across the Middle East, specifically the Sunni monarchies, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, for example, that are traditionally aligned with America. Those states are now listening much more to Russia and prospectively will buy more Russian military equipment, which helps Putin's economy, obviously. So that's a mercantilist agenda he has. But more than that, where they align under the Russian orbit, their willingness to not do things such as fund Sunni Islamist groups is reduced, because that's the pressure point that the United States puts on. Russia doesn't have that much interest in that. And at the same time, through the Russian empowerment, through the alignment with Iran in Syria, the Iranians are empowered by this Russian gambit. And again, part of that is the Russians wanting to sell their military equipment, which they do in large quantities. But part of it is also saying to the Iranians, well, look, where before you had to fear American leadership in the Middle East, because if you crossed a certain line, we might push back against you. Now that fear is degraded because they think essentially they have a de facto alignment with Russia, that the Russians say you can do pretty much, you know, whatever you want.
And I think it's been obvious for a long time that those Gulf states that you mentioned, and bin Laden said it best, they follow the strong horse. And I don't think anyone can say that the past 8 years have led anyone to believe that America is the strong horse. So we have become the weak horse, the Russians, and they haven't had to do that much. That's the amazing thing. You know, they didn't follow the rules and the laws of land warfare, and they squashed a lot of ISIS infrastructure and Assad enemy infrastructure flat without any concern for civilian casualties. And guess what? That was brutally effective. And the people in that area look at that and say, okay, these guys are playing a serious game and the U.S. isn't. So I think you're absolutely right. They have led our allies to see us as weaker, and they have empowered one of our enemies and the enemies of peace, Iran. So given that, how does Trump turn that around? How does he then look Vlad Putin in the eye and not see the wrong thing?
Yeah, well, the first thing, I would disagree with you slightly. I don't think the Russians have really any interest in, and I don't think their targeting profile thus far shows interest in degrading ISIS.
Yeah, that's fair.
How does Trump deal with them? I think, you know, in my latest piece at National Review, I outline a number of proposals. The first thing is to understand what Putin is. And Putin is someone who is, you know, to some degree a manipulator. That's his preference. But he's also a killer, right? That he will take steps. He's not going to, you know, use that kind of activity against Trump, but he is very aggressive, hyper aggressive, and that is rendered in some of the activities he has pursued. The second point, though, and I think the functional point, is Trump needs to understand that Putin's interest in the United States is not the he doesn't have, as I see it, a great interest in a mutually beneficial relationship. What he wants from the United States is for the United States to essentially back off and leave him alone. His real interest in positive relations is more vested with the European Union because of their unwillingness to challenge him in any way, and because of their reliance, potential increasing reliance on Russian energy exports. And then the final point that I talk about is the idea of practicality, that if Trump gets a deal with Putin, he has to be aware of the old Russian game that the deal may be a Trojan horse, right? That it has to be verifiable over a prolonged period of time as soon as it is agreed, because absent that, it's a joke deal that Putin will use to manipulate. And in my piece, I reference the Syria ceasefires as an and the Ukrainian ceasefires as an example of that, how Putin uses these sort of quasi deals that might appear, that might have some solid essence on the surface, to essentially drive his interests over the American interests.
But if he's making deals, where are the strengths? Where should, you know, Trump push Putin? Because Russia is always concerned about their flank. Are there ways that we can maybe cede some influence in the Central Asian areas where we don't have as much interest and maybe protect what should be more important to us, our real allies in the EU?
Well, so I think to some degree, Jim, that's, you know, a fair point, that we have to pick realist interests, what matters for us. And the first thing, and I say this as an American who, hence my accent, grew up abroad in the EU, apart from the UK, Poland, one of the Baltic states, I think Estonia, Greece, no EU state, no NATO member state is spending that 2%. And Trump was right to be angry about that. And I think there's a real opportunity there. And I know the British want to act as a kind of interlocutor for Trump. So one of the ways he can put pressure on Russia is by putting pressure on EU states to spend more on defense and to carry part of that weight, part of that burden. And if they do that, that immediately sends a message to Putin. Wow, actually, Trump is the deal maker. He has, in the space of a, you know, one NATO session, got a very significant increase in defense spending that is designed to prevent a Russian incursion or aggression against the West. But in terms of the specific issue of regional or geopolitical interests, one area where I think Trump can put pressure on is in terms of the South China Sea, to pressure the Russians to back away from some of the alignment that they've been flirting with the Chinese. And I think they've been doing that because they sense they can get away with it. But if the United States puts that as a key priority issue, which I think it should be, I think the Russians would potentially back away. Another issue, Iran, putting pressure on Iran. And the way you do that, I think, is that you say with the Iran nuclear deal, well, here, we expect a reform to prevent the Iranians from doing what they are doing on ballistic missile testing. And if we don't do that, we're going to throw up all kinds of obstacles for Russian companies, for European companies that want to do business with Iran, that we essentially muddy the waters in the same way that the Russians have quite effectively done. And then in Syria is the final point. I think we say in a realist way that we recognize that the Russians are never going to give up their bases, Latakia and Tartus, on the western coast of Syria, and that they're going to have influence, that they've bought influence, quite frankly, over what the next Syrian government looks like. But I think we have to push very strongly for the idea that the replacement should not be Assad. It should not be necessarily the person that the Sunni rebellion wants, because, you know, then the civil war keeps rolling on and on and on. But if we can find a compromise candidate who at least allows the moderate Sunni rebellion to feel, okay, we have an option other than joining ISIS as the only mechanism for Sunni empowerment, that would be a positive thing. So some of these things are, a lot of these things are in the weeds, I guess, but they are practical and they are possible. And the thing is, why haven't they happened under President Obama? Because, quite frankly, Putin knows he's weak, he's malleable, and he's just pushed the line without being pushed back. And I think what we need to see from Trump much more is what we saw, at least in a snapshot yesterday at that press conference, where he said, maybe I won't be friends with Putin, but I hope to be.
Tom Rogan, columnist for National Review. Let us hope that some of the folks at Trump Tower are listening, because that was some darn good advice. Up next, we will talk with Megha Priya from The Federalist.